Don't we always say something funny at the beginning?
I'm not actually sure that's true.
Hey guys, it's Tuesday. It is, what is the date today? May 2nd. 2nd of May. Anything significant about that?
No longer May Day.
Right.
Which, by the way, I was trying to figure out why Russia did those May Day parades, you know, where they used to show off all their missiles and stuff. That was like the classic Kremlinology right. kind of thing. And it turns out that they had turned May Day into the International Workers' Day or something like that. You know what I mean? The communists had turned it into a holiday for workers, sort of their Labor Day.
Ah, okay. Well.
So there you go.
Happy May Day yesterday. Or, you know, rabbit. That's a thing, right?
Rabbit?
Isn't what is that a thing? I don't know. Adrian said that to me. She said, rabbit. I said, what is that? She said, it's the first day of the month.
She says, it's a thing.
It's the thing. I'm like, I never heard of this.
We're rabbit. Like, wait, I don't know. What
rabbit,
kind of thing
rabbit?
Is it?
She's like, why not gopher? Or, you know, why is...
Oh, I see. Here we go. rabbit is one variation of a superstition found in Britain and North America that states that a person should say or repeat the word rabbit or rabbits or white rabbits or some combination of these elements out loud upon waking on the first day of the month.
How many times?
Because doing so will ensure good luck for the duration of the month. I think as many times as you can say it before the person next to you slaps you for saying
Oh, well, she got the two. I mean, good. She only said it twice. I don't mean she got the two and I slapped the crap out of her. What are you saying to me? No, it wasn't that. Rabbit. Okay.
Rabbit. There you go. I don't know. I don't know. Exact origins are unknown.
Well.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Hop to it,
yeah,
Bill.
So there you go. Rabbit. Yeah. Good.
All right. So it is on okay. Taking Pictures. It is your weekly blast of photography and whatever else we can think of. Yeah. It's episode 262. Wow, 262. Like the Messerschmitt 262. You know that plane?
Ah, yep, sure.
Beautiful plane. ME-262.
Beautiful.
Episode 262. We're into year six. This is the second episode of year six, which is kind of cool. Bill Wadman in Brooklyn, Jeffrey yep. Sidoris in Silver Spring. Let's get into it, man.
Yeah, the 262 was like the first jet, wasn't it?
I believe so.
Man, those Nazis, they had things wired, man. They had jets and rockets and all kinds of
hey,
fun stuff.
Come on now. Just ease up.
No, I'm just saying that they were...
It's becoming frighteningly familiar.
They were impressive engineers, is all I'm saying. Although I think the thing could only run for 23 minutes on the amount of gas it had in it or something, right?
But it was some kind really of fast like for those that. 23 minutes.
Right. I'm dead serious. I think that's kind of how it was.
Right.
Okay. Can I do like a little rant here before we get
Absolutely.
Started?
Absolutely. I have been waiting for this for minutes.
It's not that much of a rant. It's more, okay. So my-
Don't set it up, man. Just dive in.
My dear mother has been using- an iPhone 5, specifically Conrad's hand-me-down iPhone 5 for the past couple of years.
Okay.
And apparently it's sort of not ringing anymore and dying, or at least this is the story from Cynthia. So I don't know whether this is true or I'm just taking it from afar.
Okay.
But my mother decides she has to go down to see my sister and the kids for a couple of weeks. So she decided she wanted a new phone.
Right.
I'm going to go buy a new phone. You know, I'm like, okay, well, she's like, I'm going to go to AT&T. I was like, no. Just Ugh. If you're going to buy a new phone.
Were all of the other carriers closed
that
day? They
said they're
going to
give me a deal.
Day?
And I was like, Ugh. you don't want a deal. Just go. You have your SIM. Just go to the Apple store. And if you're going to do the monthly thing, do it there. Cause then you'll get Apple Care. And then you don't have to think about it. You don't have to sign some contract with AT&T. You know what I mean? Just if you're going to buy one, just do it from Apple. So she's like, well, what should I get? So I tell her, you know, go get a iPhone 7, try maybe the Plus because it has the dual cameras because, you know,
significantly
there's the photography
larger
connection.
Though. Does she like large
well,
phones?
Well, significantly larger. But here's the thing. My mother never uses her phone one-handed. She's always sort of a two-handed hunt and peck tap kind of person.
Yeah.
And the big one has a much bigger battery, which my mother always complains about
right.
her battery dying. So bigger battery and bigger screen, plus she's... going to be 70 this year, I think. So, right. You know, for her, you know, 69. So for her, like a little bit bigger, maybe the stuff on the screen. So anyway, she's going to go to there. But I said, before you go, make sure you back up your old phone, you know, back everything up.
I smell disaster coming.
Right. Now, insert here how things just work on Apple products. Remember that whole...
By and large,
that's,
yeah.
That's why people buy these things. For some unknown reason, every time I do anything with my mother that involves any sort of computer device, everything goes to hell. I spent 2 hours with her trying to get her phone backed up.
Why would it not back up?
She has a 2009 iMac that I put an SSD in a couple years ago.
Remember that?
It had El Cap on it. It's perfectly usable for what she needs it for, right?
Still has El Cap or is it Sierra now?
Still has El Cap just because I never put it up to Sierra because the last time I was there, Sierra was fairly new and I didn't want to, you know, I'm not big on first couple releases of any of the Apple operating systems. Like if there's no reason to update, I tend to stay back a shift, you know. But so she plugs in the phone and of course it starts trying to, you know, sync and it won't sync and, you know, all this kind of stuff. So, okay, so turn that off. All right. So, you know, put in a password. So now it's an encrypted backup, right? You know, you want to like do the encrypted backup so your passwords are kept. So she puts in her thing and she creates a backup. It worked. Whew, you know, great. Now, her phone stuff was too big to fit in the 5 gigs that they give her on iCloud. So she couldn't do an iCloud backup, right? So I was like, this is better anyway. It's a nice complete backup. You can come home with your phone tomorrow. You can go buy it tomorrow. Come home with the phone and then you can just plug it in, restore, and everything will be fine.
Right.
So the next day, I get a phone call at noon and my mother is flipping out. This won't work. It says it can't restore. I got to go back to the Apple store. I don't, these stupid things never work and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, whoa. Like you need to chill. We have hidden your Firebird keys, right?
Right. Right.
And I said, look, I'm willing to help you. This is great. I'm going to figure this out for you. But if you need to go breathe for 10 minutes and then come back and talk to me, that would be super, you know, like just, I can't deal with you right now like this.
Right.
And so it took us, you know, I guess what happens sometimes is that it wouldn't restore. It said there was some sort of error or the backup was corrupt. Right. But the problem is that the way to deal with this, according to all of the stuff, is crazy terminal commands to delete the old backups and recreate backups, right? Like this kind of thing. Basically, there's some crud in there that's choking up the works. So, but this is not the kind of thing you can easily say to your mother. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or explain to her. So in the end, I ended up, we updated iTunes and then we updated the new phone, which wasn't even on the latest version of iOS. It was like, you know, a dot release or two behind because it was manufactured 3 months ago. You know, I mean, the usual stuff. So long story short, we get it backed up and it still won't restore. We end up removing all the images off of her phone, putting them on Google Photos and not having them back those up to iCloud, back up to iCloud, bring it, restore from iCloud. But of course it does the thing where it says, oh, in order to verify your iCloud thing you just typed in, we're going to send you a text.
Right.
Except the text can't get to you because you're not yet verified as the phone.
Right. You have to have another device.
Are you kidding me with this stuff? It was, and then of course you're doing it from afar with the person you're talking going, it says it can't do it. What do you mean it says it can't? I don't know, Billy. It says it can't do it. You know?
you're imagining a dialogue box on the window on the screen that says, it says I can't do it. Yes. Nope. Can't do it.
It's like, oh, you know, it's like every single possible thing that could go wrong went wrong. It took like 4 hours for my mother from beginning to end over the 2 days to like get her phone up and running.
Wow.
But my point is that, you know, as we make Wait, is it back up and running? Yes. As far as I know, it is up and running. And you know, and then I said, can you feel the you know, the home button does the real buzzing thing instead of the actual clicking thing. And she's like, I don't feel it. I don't think it's working. You know? And then, of course, her husband's like, I feel it. You can feel it. Cindy, press the button. It's like something out of a movie, right? And so anyway, the point is that none of this stuff actually works the way you want it to work when you need it to work. Like when you're dealing with your mother over the phone from 300 miles away.
Right. It is. And, it is true. But it's, you know what? It's not relegated to just Apple. I mean, but, you know.
No. It's everybody. But the problem is that Apple puts themselves on a high pedestal by saying, oh, that the reason why you buy our thing is because it just works.
Right.
You know what
right,
I mean?
Right. Yeah. My dad would call and so, you know, go, my screen's purple. And I go, well,
right.
What do you mean it's purple? I don't know. It's just purple.
Yeah.
Well, what did you do? What were you doing?
I don't know. I just clicked on something.
No, he would go, I was looking through directories and I didn't recognize some of the things, so I just deleted them.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, what directory? He's like, the Windows directory. I didn't know what it was. Yeah. I just deleted it.
It says a library. I don't want a library, so I just deleted it. it's totally like that. And you kind of want, you step back and you think about it for a minute and you go, you know, you and I just sort of dance around these things all day long doing what we do. And sometimes we get stuck into corners, you know?
Right.
I just can't imagine what it's like for people who don't think about this stuff the way we do. Anyway,
it's very,
I'm sorry to go on for 10 minutes, but oh, it's so frustrating. Yeah. And you know, and you have a phone that's whatever, 4 years old now. And apparently, like, if you don't have the right combination of iOS versions on both of the phones and correct iTunes versions on the correct macOS version,
right,
then all bets are off.
Well, and it's the same thing migrating OS X. It's the same thing happens. If you're trying to go from an LCAP machine and you want to move all your stuff over onto a Sierra machine, I've had a couple friends just in the last couple of months call and go, you're a Mac guy. Why doesn't this work?
Right. Yeah. And it's like, I don't know why it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Stop. So, who are you? Stop calling.
That's right. Prank caller.
I don't know who this Jeffrey guy is. I don't, it's, I feel like it all should be easier by now.
Right.
And, you know, we talked last week about the selling features on cameras.
Right.
As software updates. And that's the part of all of it that worries me, right? Is that cameras will become as unreliable as our phones and computers are versus this mechanical device. I mean, say what you will about a 5D, but the reason why people use 5Ds is because they, you know, you could throw them off a cliff, pick them up, and keep shooting because they're tanks.
Yeah, they're almost the digital equivalent of like a Nikon F or an F2 or something.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So it's like that's why people want these things, because they just work, you know? I saw a picture today. There was an article that I don't have in the show notes, but I will put in the show notes just because it's relative. A female photographer named Catherine Leroy, mm-hmm. who was a French war photographer. There's an article in the New York Times, the greatest war photographer you've never heard
of. Oh, yeah, I read that. I read that article.
Yeah. And but there's pictures of her in the middle of it, you know, with a Leica around her neck.
Right.
And I was thinking, you know, this is 1967 or whatever it is. That Leica came out, I don't know, 30, 40 years before that. Could you imagine if people were still using 5Ds in 20 years? You know what I mean? Like that the standard machinery that we used was the standard machinery for decades.
Sure.
Or now, two or three days around
with a Nikon 885 or a 990 or something. You're like, look,
exactly.
But the whole body twists. Look.
Yeah. And it's still for sale.
Right.
Right. It's not like, oh, I have this old camera and I'm still using it because it still works good. Hey, I've got a Leica and a Hasselblad. Like I know I'm good with those things, but you know, but it's not like I bought one yesterday and it was the same one they sold in 1956, which is essentially what a lot of these are. Anyway, I worry that that creeping software into cameras is going to creep bugs into cameras in a way that is not a good thing.
Buy this and fix for only $9.99.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, exactly.
Right?
And this is part of the reason why I prefer cameras that feel like mechanical cameras with a little computer attached, like most of the cameras that I use, versus a camera that feels like an iPhone with a much bigger camera mm-hmm. attached to it. You know, I want a camera with a computer, not a computer with a camera.
Right. Well, and interestingly, if you look at, this is kind of, bear with me.
Yep.
I've been looking at cameras, right?
Somebody mentioned it to me.
No.
I think it was on Twitter.
It's on Twitter. But if you look at look at something like the X-T2, which is arguably, you know, one of, if not the top APS-C censored cameras available right now. Can we agree on that? It's probably the X-T2 or maybe the D500. But if you look at the X-T2 and look at it side by side with something like the EM1 Mark II, the Olympus, I think those two cameras illustrate your point. The Fuji feels more like a mechanical object because of the build, the dials, the buttons, the layout of things. It feels more like an analog-y, I'm in control of what I'm going to get. Whereas the EM1 feels much more like the other side. It's a computer in the shape of a camera. It feels, because everything is sort of menu-driven, and it just feels like more of a technical instrument than a creative instrument, if that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Do you think that that's the way, regardless of the performance you got out of it, do you think that that's the way you'd see it if you were working, if you had them, you know?
I don't know.
Is that part of your worry?
I don't know. I mean, I feel that way in the little time that I've held like the Sony A7 series. That camera strikes me as that same kind of thing. It feels very cold and computery, not warm and analog-y, if that makes sense. And it might not make sense. It might be
With the Sony, did you say?
Yeah, the A7.
Yeah. That's precisely my problem with the Sonys. Like it doesn't feel like a camera that I'd want to hold.
Yeah.
All the time, regardless of the performance of it, right? I wonder if camera designers are still thinking about that, or if the whole thing has really been overtaken by engineers who aren't photographers. I mean, that's one of the things a lot of people say about the Z that I use, is that it feels like it was designed by photographers.
Right.
You know, and that's like one of the things people like about it. And there's a lot to say for that. And I think when I was younger, I wouldn't have cared as much, but I'm caring more now.
Well, I mean, to your point about like the 5Ds and going back a little bit, I am having a conversation later today with, it's the first episode of a new set of process-driven conversations with a photographer who chooses to use 5D Mark IIs. They do everything he needs them to do. He can get them for a good price. And if they get water damaged or fall off a cliff or, you know, fall out of his hang glider or whatever, you know, you can get another one for $600-700 instead of $4,000. And right, he puts money into glass instead.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. It's funny. Lately, for some reason, I guess, and this is just one of those things like we've talked about before, where when you get a new camera or a new car or a new house, eventually it's just your camera or car or house. You know what I mean? Like the new whatever glow goes away and it's just a thing eventually.
Right.
You know?
Right. Well, the car, it's when that first idiot puts a ding in your door.
Right. And then it's just your car and you're thinking about that damn ding for the next 4 years. Right. And, you know, I've been using this camera now enough and now a ton, you know, doing these daily things and stuff.
Right.
You know, I'm starting to get used to these files to the point where I go, are these files as good as they were when I got this camera? You know what I mean? Like I start
Has the glow worn off yet?
Yeah. Has the camera deteriorated? Like is the sensor wearing out or something? You know, just because of some minor thing that I've noticed in a picture or whatever.
Right.
And then those motion pictures I took a billion years ago, I sold the rights to them to this hotel for this thing recently. Anyway, I had to recreate the old ones, but at higher resolution. So I had to go back to the original raw files from my 5D Mark II and up-res them from there and then recreate the feel of the original ones yesterday. Mm-hmm. It was like my thing I had to do yesterday.
What did you end up using for the up-res? Did you keep it in Photoshop or did you use third party?
I actually went back to the raw files and re-rendered the raw files at double res at 200%
in Photoshop
in ACR, I guess. I don't know that there's a way to up res from raw in Lightroom, like force Lightroom to render a larger image than it natively is. But you can in ACR, you can right down the bottom, you can Adobe Camera Raw, you can click and say, how big do you want this file to be? So I did it that way, figuring that'll get as much information as I could possibly get out of this, you know.
And what did you think?
Well, it's funny. Shadows are really terrible.
Are they really?
Oh, God, yes.
Like color noise?
Yes, a lot of color noise. Oh. And this was ISO 100 F11. You know what I mean? This is like best case scenario. Now, they were slightly underexposed. The way that these images are, the original files are kind of flat and slightly underexposed.
Right.
But it's that's just kind of the way it is. And then you add a lot to them after the fact. But, it, you know, I was looking at them and I'm working with them and I was thinking, oh, wow, the heesh, ooh. You know what I mean? There was lots of, it was bad. I mean, not like unusably bad, obviously, it's fine.
So what did you use? Compared to my new camera. Did you use something like Neat or Noise Ninja or something? What did you use?
Well, in ACR, there's, actually the built-in ACR noise reduction, like from the RAW, is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
So I click that up a few notches, but then when you add in a little high pass sharpening and stuff that I did originally to get them looking that way, mm-hmm. it ends up crunching them up again.
Right.
At a certain point you have to embrace the crunch.
Yeah. You're bringing it up to bring it back down or vice versa.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm not that concerned about it, you know, it was fine. Anyway,
what are they going to render them at? What's the final size?
9 by 6 feet, something like that.
Holy moly.
Yeah, like the size of a wall.
That's
on
a
fabric.
Big image. Oh, wow.
Which, you know,
The fabric side of it, I think that will actually work to your benefit.
Yeah. Because, I mean, ultimately, these things are all about the shapes. It's not about the pixels. I'm not looking for per pixel sharpness in the eyes of the people in the picture.
Sure. But, I mean, the fabric versus, glossy paper, you know?
Yeah. But I would rather have the file that they print have more pixels rather than less and having the thing up-res it.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
Anyway, it worked out fine. It will work out fine. I bring it up only as an example of, I went back and looked at some of the old files and man, are they noisy.
Right.
But anyway, this is what you learn. This is, you live and you learn, Jeffrey.
It is true. It is true.
Speaking of which, it's, you put in a thing here about an Ars Technica article.
Yeah. Did you see this?
Yeah, I did actually.
So just set it up.
So there's all this talk lately about how Apple's going to build a new Mac Pro in a couple of years or a year. What did they say? They said not this year, but
maybe
they didn't say
2018,
also next year.
Maybe.
Right. And it'll be modular. Basically, they're probably going to go back to some sort of compact version of the tower, the cheese grater that they used to make, or some sort of thing more like that.
Right.
Which all of us are very excited about, but they point out in this Ars Technica article that, you know, yeah, okay, we're going to wait for that. And the iMacs haven't been updated in 2 years or whatever it is, almost, you know, a year and a half, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And now we're waiting another year and a half for this other thing that Hackintoshes end up looking pretty good.
Right.
For serious users is basically what it's saying.
And they're so easy now. The whole install process has become pretty seamless.
Yeah. It's got, and hey, did you ever, this is what I was going to call you this week about. We'll just do it on the air. Did you end up getting a new video card?
I did not.
Planning on it?
Yeah, I'm definitely still planning on it. Probably going to go 1060. I don't see the benefit for me, the extra 150 that it would cost to go to the 1070.
No, if you do the 1060 with the 6 gigs of RAM, I think that's fine.
It's fine. It's less power consumption than something like a 980 Ti, and you get more CUDA cores. So in theory, that should be better for like Premiere Pro or even Photoshop. Really.
Yeah, I'm actually excited. Can we? I know we have a lot of stuff in the rundown, but
no, go
this
ahead.
Is kind of it makes sense. They put out a new version of DaVinci Resolve this last week.
Like a dot release or a whole new? A whole
14.
New, oh, wow. Oh, okay.
A preview. It's a beta release of version 14, which I can't use because I'm still currently running Yosemite waiting to finish up a project so I can move over to
Sierra. Oh, it's
a
Sierra-only thing? Yeah.
Or at least LCAP and better. It wouldn't install them. Or actually, it installed, it wouldn't run. But one of the things it does is they added... It's got a whole new audio engine in it, like this crazy, Ferrolite designed audio engine. And apparently it's getting crazy reviews, you know, just by people trying it and everything. Apparently it's fantastic. My buddy Claude says it was chewing through 264 4K footage.
Wow,
like nothing. So apparently they updated the engine too, the video engine.
Can you use it as a standalone audio editor?
Well, that's the thing. I think I don't see why not, right? Basically, just use it like you could use Premiere or anything else. Just use the audio tracks and ignore the video tracks and export audio, you know? That's why. That's the reason I brought it up and put it in here. I also thought,
it's still a fun thing to do. They still do the free version.
Yeah. There's nothing also stopping you, as far as I know, from using DaVinci Resolve to color photos.
Ah, mm-hmm. And use their grading tools, sure.
Because there's a lot of stuff in here. There are tools in here that are not really in Photoshop easily. For example, there is a function in DaVinci Resolve to a curve that varies saturation based on how saturated something already is. So you can add saturation to places that are already saturated, but not pull up places that are more neutral, or bring up saturation in places that are really neutral, but not blow out places that are already saturated.
Right.
Like, so stuff that you just, yes, you could do it in Photoshop and there are ways to do it, but it's not quite the same direction, right? You're not coming at it from the same angle.
Right. Have you looked at their render engine for stills?
I haven't, but you know, it finishes movies. So I don't know why.
Right.
I mean, I guess the only limitation might be limitations on resolution.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I don't
like actual pixel size.
Right. It may be that the timeline will only allow you to do up to a 4K image, but maybe it could do an 8K image. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. In which case I could totally, anyway, it was just something I hadn't thought of. And I wonder if other people had ever done
it. And they dropped the price of Studio by $600.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, okay. See, that's pretty cool, too.
Studio version is now available for $299 instead of the previous $899. Wow.
Yeah. So
just, that's in line with like Final Cut and Premiere Pro.
Yeah, but the free version does everything except for, I think, the noise reduction.
Right.
And multiple video cards.
Right.
Which are a lot less necessary now than they used to be.
Interesting.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, this is good.
Anyway, just something to think about as a fun thing.
And I would think, it works great with your 970, so I would imagine that with a 1060, it's gonna sing, right?
I'm sure it would be fine. Yeah. Way better than my 760 I used to have.
Right.
By the way. Anyway, enough computer nerd stuff. Let's talk about some.
Is there ever enough computer nerd stuff? Come on.
I like the computer nerd stuff.
I feel like we need more computer nerd stuff in year six.
I think we do too.
I mean, come on.
I miss the computer nerdery. Nerdery.
Yes.
I was.
You know, we
I,
need to talk, I w- talk about Cherry switches and you know, OLED panels. And
I went to a new music performance the other night, like modern classical, as it were, right?
Yep.
Like new classical music. And some pretty trippy stuff was going on. Pieces written for three triangles. And stuff like that. Yeah, some pretty heady stuff. And this guy sitting next to me was like, "Oh, how do you know Frank?" And I was like, "Well, one of the performers." And I said, "Oh, I've known Frank since 1993 when I taught him how to use Finale."
Oh, right,
which
God.
Was the old
the old notation software.
Still is, I guess.
Do they still make it?
Oh, yeah. I think I'm 90% sure. They must. Yeah, they absolutely do. Yep. Right. And I remember teaching it. Oh my God, it's version 25, Jeffrey. I used to use version 3.5 and now it's at version 25. And I even remember my serial number was WFNA 103242.
Nice.
Because I used to have to type it in whenever I installed it again.
Well, it wasn't dongle based.
No, it was password, but you could only install two copy, like it was some kind of crazy copy protection.
Do you remember dongles? How ridiculous that was.
Hey, they still exist. I think Pro Tools still uses a dongle.
Seriously?
Yeah. Ugh. The higher end versions do. Yeah. In fact, even if you use the free version, you have this like little software dongle that sits in your tray,
like a little daemon that runs all the time.
Yep.
Ugh.
Yep. In fact, I have it installed right now just to teach a friend some stuff in Pro Tools. And I was like, I don't want that in there. Get it out of my...
I think the first version of Lightwave I bought, 3D rendering package, had this big parallel dongle that they, you know, they ship you. And you got to plug it into the parallel port. And you're like, really? This is your thing?
Yeah. That's the best way they can do it. So, Jeff, are you going to buy a new camera, or are you going to give away some of the money and buy an old camera?
You know, this was a really great story. This is yet another reason that we have amazing listeners, and I know that gets thrown around as hyperbole, but this is a great story. A listener wrote in and was looking at getting a new camera, and specifically looking at the X-T2. And instead of getting the X-T2 and a new, you know, cadre of lenses, he decided to go backwards a generation and get the X-T1 and take the rest of the money that would have been used on that other kit and donate it to a foundation called the Maria Cristina Foundation to support a full year of education of a young girl in Dhaka.
Yeah.
And I mean, come on, you know me. I'm like tearing up by the end of this letter.
Yeah.
You know, just...
You were tearing up before it got to your interview.
It's probably just the anticipation of it. Yeah, what's the line from Fight Club? Eyes already shrink wrapped in tears. It's just a really it's a matter of perspective, you know. We think that the latest greatest sometimes is the best choice, and for some people it is. For some people it absolutely is, but I think for the majority of us, as we've talked about earlier in this episode, you know, a generation or two back isn't going to harm you too much. And if you're not going to donate, you know, money, nobody says you have to do that. But wouldn't it be great to maybe get a generation older and buy some plane tickets and go travel and use the camera?
Sure.
Rather than buying this kit that you now can't afford to go anywhere to use.
Right. Absolutely.
So just really nice. Thank you very much. You know who you are.
Yeah.
Thanks for sending that in. I both of us, you know, we talked about it before the show, and we both really appreciate it and think that's a really...
Wait, I missed it. Did you plug the thing he sent the money
to? Yeah, it's called the Maria Cristina Foundation.
Okay. I'll put a link in the show notes.
Looks like they do some good work.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the idea of... I mean, even if it's buying a camera and then finding a way to give back to your community by taking pictures, you know,
sure.
Like let's say, you know... lower income people looking for jobs need a picture so they can go on LinkedIn or whatever it is. You know what I mean? Like, what, set up a little portrait booth to like help people out. You know, there's all kinds of things that can be done.
Go look at Help Portrait, Jeremy Cowart's
there you go.
Organization. Yep. You know, we did that for several years, and it's a terrific group of people, you know, taking family photos for people who otherwise can't get them. That's
exactly
a pretty cool thing.
Yep. There are ways to be a good part of society. All right, what else we got here? We got
I don't know, we got a lot of random stuff in here. What is this?
We do have a lot of random stuff in here. Did I put that in there, or did you put that in there? I think I did.
Oh yeah, I did. So it's an article from the Nonprofit Quarterly, which I don't know where I got this from. I would imagine Fielding may have sent this to me.
I think that's perfectly reasonable.
Doesn't that look like a Fielding thing?
Yeah, it looks like it.
Yeah. Boston Museum of Fine Arts argues with Instagram over what art is.
Actually, I think that cover is a picture of Fielding in like 20 years.
Nice. I didn't say that, honey. I didn't say it.
I love you. Okay, bye.
So, yeah, click. from the article here, as we know, museums have been very active in experimenting with social media to expand their reach and the public's interest in art. Here in DC, by the way, the Hirshhorn has been fantastic with Kusama's infinity mirrors on social media about getting people to that exhibit. And I think the social media thing is really what has helped the attendance of that particular exhibit. Anyway. Those efforts have been largely successful, but sometimes the very new gets tripped up by the old, and so it is in this story. But here, the old is represented by Instagram. Isn't that funny to think of Instagram as old?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, Instagram is what the old people use.
Right. All the kids are on something else, whatever they are.
It's not even Snapchat. They're on something. What's the next thing after Snapchat?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Whatever
I know
it is.
20 years old on Snapchat, which means the kids are back on email. They're making web pages on GeoCities.
Right. They're going back. Those of you with kids who have phones, podcasted on taking pictures. What are your kids using? What are the social media go-tos that your kids are using? We would love to know that.
What apps do you think your kids are using?
Yeah, right.
They're using something else.
Right.
Anyway, go ahead.
They're all false icons, so their parents don't know what they're using.
Did you? I did. A friend of mine did that in college in '94. I had a Windows box, and somebody came in, took a screenshot of my thing, of my desktop, turned that into the wallpaper, and then removed all the icons.
Nice.
So it looked like it was a screen full of stuff. It was so mean.
Genius. You're like, what? What happened?
Anyway, go
ahead. There was an iOS. You can send, you know, the little animated GIF of the ellipsis as someone is typing.
Yeah. Sure.
You can send that GIF to somebody, and they'll just always think that you're typing, and they're sitting there waiting for you to finish typing what you're typing, but it never happens because it's just a GIF.
Yeah, exactly. That's so mean.
So when Instagram censored photographs from the Boston Museum of Fine Arts photographic exhibition of abstracted nudes by Imogen Cunningham, the museum decided to fight. But it's hard to fight someone who won't answer you. So the Boston Museum contacted both Facebook and Instagram and said,
and got
look,
absolutely no reply.
Absolutely no reply. They said, look, here's who we are.
There are only machines there.
Yeah, yeah. So the bot chose not to reply. Censorbot says no, right? But it just brought up an interesting discussion around, you know, here are images that have been in the canon of iconic photography since arguably they were taken.
But now,
because of some sort of weird draconian, you know, no nipple policy, they are deemed pornography by whatever either person or bot is.
Yeah,
is.
If you took a picture of Birth of Venus, would it get flagged?
Right. But here's the thing, and this is something interesting. There's a I was talking to a listener who shoots a lot of nudes, is on Instagram, has had several images banned, and he said, but go look at this person. Go look at this other photographer, and I'll tell you offline.
There's other people getting away with it.
And this other photographer has over 1 million followers, and regularly,
so what's the difference?
I don't know, but regularly posts nudity that doesn't get flagged.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, I'll send it to you after the show. I don't want to call it out on the show because that's rude, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, this is the constant problem, this battle of what is art, what is pornography.
Right.
But it's funny because from Imogen Cunningham, man, you're talking about, this is not Mapplethorpe we're talking about.
No,
this is pretty tame.
Exactly. You know, come on.
Right. Yeah, there are no whips were harmed in the making of these photographs. But, right, yeah, absolutely. So, I don't know, it's...
Oh, come on, Bill. Walk it off. It wasn't that bad.
it's just wrong. There's this community standards things. There's international stuff. There's religious stuff. I mean, there's all kinds of arguments about it. I mean, and then there's the argument that ultimately Instagram or whatever is a private company that could do anything they damn well please. And if they don't want to have to deal with nudes of, you know, some woman taking selfies that are really explicit, they'll just block everything.
But again, I think it's the inconsistency that people seem to have the biggest problem with.
Right.
It's not across the board. And nor does it seem to be consistent between Facebook and Instagram.
Right. Well, I mean, somebody pointed out the other day, and don't want to get into this as a larger thing, but just as an example, all that stuff there where Uber was doing all kinds of illegal stuff in the App Store and Apple was just like, knock it off. And it's like, well, if it was anybody but Uber, they'd be banned. But Facebook and Uber and these things have gotten to the point where they're too big to fail. And now they can't be banned because people might actually leave iOS if they can't get Uber and Facebook or whatever. Right. Mm-hmm. So who has the power now? Not Apple. Right. So, you know, is there a situation if Donald Trump tweeted a nude picture of Melania and put it on Twitter, is Twitter going to remove the president's tweet? I don't know.
Probably not, since they haven't removed any of them so far.
Right, you know, and so you kind of go, well, then yeah, if this is not an egalitarian kind of place where the rules are the same for everybody, well, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. And shouldn't there be some sort of exemption for artwork, photographs that were taken 100 years ago that are considered high art and sell for tens of thousands of dollars? You know, I mean,
you would think. But then,
but how do you prove you can, that, and who are you talking to?
Exactly. You know? And then you can make the case of, well, look, Mapplethorpe hung in museums. He's in galleries all over the world. So
yep.
Why is this different?
Well, in my opinion, it's not. And you should allow Mapplethorpe on there, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, what are we doing? We're protecting kids from what? Beautiful people's bodies shot in 1930, you know? Like, really? Like, that's what we're worried about? That's right. What's going to eat away the core of America or whatever? This is ridiculous.
Yeah, too late.
Yeah. But in some ways, arguably, maybe the kerfuffle about this is actually better advertising for the show than the pictures would have been.
Maybe. You know? Yeah.
So
it's an ongoing discussion, and what it seems that it's a discussion that the powers that be aren't really interested in having as much as they're interested in just sort of towing the line. Towing right. the TOS line, you know.
Well, I think that for the people at Google or at Instagram, this is not even on their radar. I mean this is big beans to you and me because, you know, Resource Magazine writes about it or whatever, you know. But this is one of 600 things that they're fielding each day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's but yeah, it is a problem that somebody needs to figure out.
You want to talk about our sponsor and then move these below it? Move these three things below?
We could do that.
And have a discussion.
Sure. So our today's sponsor is the lovely people at Squarespace, who we always love, and I desperately need to go on an update because I've been very what's the word I'm looking for?
Lazy.
Yes,
confused. Yes,
lazy, sure, lazy is the word.
Despondent.
I've been
apathetic.
I've been tell me when to stop. About putting my He's like, you're all of these things. Which one do you want to be? I have not made I've made my next move. I just haven't placed it up on Squarespace yet. I have a page up on Squarespace with each of my daily things as I'm doing them.
Yep.
And I've just, since I got back from San Francisco, I haven't put up the stuff from San Francisco in the last week. I just haven't gotten around to it. So I got to go up there and put those up there. But Squarespace.
If only there was a way to make your next website without coding, Bill.
Well, that's the thing. I don't need to code. You know what I need to do? I need to log in and drag them from one folder onto a big plus symbol on the page.
It's really, and there's amazing. The rub.
It's so easy, and yet I still am too lazy to do it. No, I'll get to it. It's on my list. Squarespace, make your next move. Use their beautiful award-winning designer templates. You can create your online store or website with these great templates that are responsive. They look great on every browser. They've got, you know, custom fancy fonts that Squarespace allows you to get access to, which, let me tell you something, if all you're working with is the fonts that are available to you in your average person's browser, if all you got is Arial, Helvetica, Tahoma, Verdana, Times New Roman, and Comic Sans, your website ain't going to look like it's going to look on Squarespace, where you have 400,000 other great... Right. That's hyperbole.
At the click,
they have a
of
lot
a
of really great. They do have a lot of really great fonts in there.
There are probably hundreds up there.
I think there probably is at least 100. They're not your usual stuff. They're kind of interesting stuff up there.
And if you really want to go nuts with what's not there, then you can use Code Injection and use something like, you know, FontKit or FontSquirrel or, you know, any of the others.
Yep. And it's an all-in-one platform, so you don't have to worry about installing or patching or upgrading the software and making sure that it's up to date so some guy doesn't hack into it. And if you suddenly, you know, your post gets up on, you know, on Taking Pictures Google Plus forum and it gets, you know, 6 to 7 hits, you know you're covered with all the traffic coming to your thing. Because
6 to 7? Hey.
Well, you know.
What is it, a weekend?
Yeah, exactly right. No, seriously. I mean, if you get thousands and thousands of people looking at your site all of a sudden because, you know, you end up on CNN or something,
right,
it's going to be fine. They'll just, they instantiate new versions of your website in the background to load balance and all kinds of crazy stuff. It's amazing.
No dig effect here, mister.
Man, the technology behind Squarespace's back end is just boggles my mind. It's amazing.
I would love to. Where is their data center? Is it in New York?
From what I understand, at least one of their data centers is in New York, because during the flooding during Sandy, they were actually bucket brigading diesel to their generators to keep it going.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Wow. They're not messing around. Yeah, they're really great, yes. And their offices are definitely in New York, so I'm sure their offices can show you a bunch of this kind of stuff, or at least explain to you how it all works, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got award-winning Squarespace, provides award-winning 24/7 customer support, which is fantastic. So you can talk to them via chat or email. They'll get back to you 24/7 all year round. And now they support sell domains. So you can buy your domains and deal with them and manage them right on Squarespace, which is fantastic. It's a unique domain experience that's fully transparent, simple to set up, flexible for any kind of website. And Squarespace is used by a wide variety of creatives and people with businesses, musicians, designers, artists, restaurants, and more. Restaurant stuff is fantastic because there's like menu-based templates that are designed to like for you to put a menu in. So start your free trial today.
So it's a menu-based template of menu?
Okay. There are templates that are designed for restaurants that have menu sections in them waiting for you to put your menu into. How's that? Wise guy. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code
OTP
to get your 10% off your first purchase and to show your support for On Taking Pictures. So thank you so much to Squarespace for supporting 5x5 and On Taking Pictures. Squarespace, make your next move. And when I get off the show today, I'm going to go make my next move and update my 365 page.
Hey,
anyway,
can we give a little shout to keeper of the OTP list of photographers of the week, Chris Matheson?
Sure. Has he updated it? It was a few updated, weeks behind the other day.
And his site is terrific. He's got a new store, Editions of Three, he's calling it. But if you go to his site, chrismatheson.com, look at this little Bernice Abbott graphic that he's done.
I'll put a link in the show notes.
That's super cool.
Let me pull this Bernie Abbott thing up. I'll tell you if it's cool.
Christopher is a meticulous journaler. So if you want tips on journaling, I'm sure he would answer any question that you have, because the guy's a monster journaler.
Now, can I buy a copy of this Bernie Abbott thing? Because that's pretty cool.
It's kind of neat, right?
You know what makes it? The multiple colored inks.
Yeah. Chris, you should do that as a poster. Like do these things or as cards.
Yeah.
You know, as postcard sized things. That would be cool. Hey. Anyway. Chris Matheson.
Speaking of which, we need to come up with an address to send those to.
Yeah,
I think Connors says we can use his address, so we'll confirm that and make it happen next week.
Yeah,
I want to make that happen.
All right, me too.
All right, what do you want to do? You want what's the fandom link here?
A couple things. Back to the Future 4 trailer created by fans.
That's just silly.
You're right. And this other thing is a remake of Metallica's Enter Sandman by these four sisters in Colorado. And it is brilliant. I'm telling you, Bill, this is fantastic.
Enter Sandman. All right. I'm going to put a link to the Back to the
Future
thing.
Very ethereal, really dreamy. I'm telling you, go listen to this thing. It's by, they call themselves Shell.
Can you still listen to Metallica and feel the angst, or is it just kind of feel silly now because they're like 60-year-old guys?
I think they're still really a tight band. The new record...
They play great, but they're like old men now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're singing about different stuff, though.
Okay, I haven't listened to the new record.
The new record's fantastic, particularly, and I was just listening to it this morning with Fielding, particularly a track called Atlas Rise.
Oh, right. You like that Atlas Rise.
I do love that song.
I'll have to take a gander. Hmm. People say that anymore?
A gander?
I mean, I just did. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a gander.
Sure.
I'm going to take a gander.
Because you know why? Because it's spiffy.
Because if you have enough gumption.
That's right.
You can do anything. Hey, I've got a couple things in here. Number one, a listener wrote me yesterday and said, hey, I've got a quick question. I have an idea for a weekly project, but it's May now.
So what? Start now.
Well, okay, right. So that's what they asked. You know, if I want to do a year-long project and it's May, I don't know, blah, blah. I said, look, if you have a hankering to start something, just start. Wow, there's another one, hankering.
Right.
Wow. Just start and just do it. And I pointed out that my first 365 project back in 2004 was, I think, started on November 3rd or something of 2004.
Right.
So I'm definitely on board with the
start
whenever you can start. Yeah. I happen to do these two portrait ones starting on January 1st just because it's good marketing and I happen to feel like I wanted to start around then.
Right.
But otherwise, yeah, just get it going.
Yeah.
I mean, really, it's about the doing. Anytime that you feel the urge or the need or you have the gumption to actually get up and go, up and go. Like, don't use timing as an excuse.
Yeah.
Ignore
all the marketing poppycock.
Yeah. I mean, even me posting these things every day, sometimes I end up posting them really late because that's when I finish the picture, right?
Right.
Now, the smart thing to do is, well, you should wait till the next morning until the exact prime hour to post it for more likes and whatever it is. And I'm like, no, I'm posting it when I finish it. Like, it might not be the smartest thing to do, like, you know, social media wise, but it's like, I finish it and I post.
There is a time for strategy and there is a time to just get it out.
Exactly. And I'm just, it's like, I'm getting it out and I'm working on the next thing, you know?
Right.
It's interesting. So the answer is yes, do that.
Whoever you sent that to, you just start.
Yeah.
Just do it.
All right. Now here's my question for you.
Yeah.
I took a picture the other day that was a little bit un-me, a little more fashion-y than my normal stuff.
Give me a link.
It was two days ago on this thing. So what can I do? I can go to Instagram.com/Wadman365, and I'm going to click on this guy. All right. Now if I put this in, sorry. Okay. I'm putting it in Skype here.
Okay.
This picture here. This is a slightly cropped version. It's actually wider like this, but it's much more fashion-y and more like larger room and stuff around her.
Oh, yeah.
Than I normally go, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now it's fine. I like it. Maybe I'll do more stuff like that, but I'm not drawn to that specifically. Right. It's like, it's just not my thing. Right. And you and I have discussed this a little bit before, but my question is to you, like the paintings that you make, you like this multi-layered stuff with found objects, like glossed in and that kind of stuff. When did you come to that aesthetic? When did you know that's what you wanted to make? And did you find that after you had been doing other stuff? Like, had you been a impressionistic painter and all of a sudden you saw Rauschenberg and some other people and you go, that's the direction I want to go in. And how do you know that it feels right? You know?
Well,
I know there are no answers to a lot of these questions.
I think style emerges after the fact. I think deciding that you want to create a new style for yourself is folly.
Right, but you must have seen somebody else's stuff and thought, oh, that gives me ideas.
Yeah, I mean, I had been, you know, I think we've probably talked about this. I've long been fans of Cy Twombly, Shepard
Fairey.
Right.
When did you see that stuff in college, in high school?
Yeah, college. College.
Do you think that in the same way that the images that I see other people make that I think I want to make stuff like that, and then I go out and try to make stuff like that? Do you think that you and I are, I hesitate to use the word stuck, but just that we flipped to that page and the thing jammed up and that's kind of where we stayed because
I don't think
that,
so.
That's
because
my question.
It's all being filtered. It's all being distilled. Now, I will say, and this has happened with a couple of the shots, I much prefer the outtake of Daniela than the one in the 365.
Right. Yeah, and that happens, sure. But I feel like the outtake...
And I think that's different too for you.
Yes, it is too. Although I feel like the outtake is actually more along the lines of something I would normally take than the other one is, which is part of my rule, right, is to, if there's one that's riskier, I tend to use the riskier one, right? So that's like my thing, which is fine. And that's why I put it up. The outtake is just like, oh, I like this one too. This was the second runner. This is the runner up. You know what I mean? So right. I'll put it in the other feed. But there is this element of, you know, we're drawn to certain things, and I wonder why we're drawn to certain things, why we make the kind of pictures we make, why John Wilkening likes long exposure, shaky street images. You know what I mean? Like, what did he see? What, you know, how did his mind get latched onto that and found a way to turn that into meaning for him, or found that as a vehicle with which to express himself, just as an example, right?
Yeah. I think a lot of it revolves around curiosity. I think a lot of it, maybe not revolves, maybe revolves is wrong. I think it's tangential to curiosity, right? For a long time, it was follow your passion.
Sure.
But not everybody is passionate about something.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
Not everybody is. And I remember watching that Elizabeth Gilbert speech where she said that, and then she said, but most people are curious about something. And I went, you know, ding, light went off.
Yeah.
You know, and I think when as artists or photographers or writers, you filter through the things that you like. You know,
right.
If I were going to be a writer, like a fiction writer, then, you know, my champion would be somebody like William Gibson, right? His writing, to me, is very close to sort of how I think in terms of these sort of staccato and stream of consciousness kind of structure.
Right. I had a thing the other day. I watched the first episode of the Neil Gaiman American Gods thing.
Oh, I heard it's pretty good.
Well, here's it may be. I mean, it was fine. But I've realized I don't like the way Neil Gaiman writes characters. I don't like the way it's like I've realized that nothing I've ever seen that Neil Gaiman has ever done is something that I want to watch again.
Okay.
It just doesn't, you know, it's like his characters feel contrived and like just pasted into me. Like it all feels like it's trying too hard, but but other people love it. Right. So, I mean, there's an example, right? So you might like Stevenson, right? And that's your thing. But just as an example of the writer thing
Gibson,
latches on or doesn't. Or that's what
but
I'm sorry,
I think that's what you're doing is you're look. We've been doing this show for a long time, and a lot of photographers of the week are bubbling under the surface of your sort of creative consciousness.
Sure. Yeah.
So who knows where you're pulling from, and the fact that you're doing this daily project almost it more than enables it almost requires you. To explore
to try new
areas.
Absolutely, yeah.
This is the perfect safe space to try singing in a different key.
Yeah, and sometimes they don't work, and that's okay. Yeah. Like, that's part
absolutely
of, that's part of the thing. Or maybe it does work great, but I still just don't like doing it, right? That's also a thing, right? Where it's like, yeah, that worked out fine. It was, sure, I like that picture. I don't really want to take a bunch of those, but yeah, it's great for that day. It worked perfectly for that reason. You know.
Now, the other side of that is, let's say you have one of those days that, it was fine, you know, for you. It was fine. It was okay. But for some reason, that's the shot that, you know, Time Magazine goes, man, you got to do that. We want a whole photo essay on this person in that style.
Sure.
And you go, really? That's the one you want?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, and that does happen. Lots of people will write, oh my God, this is my favorite. And it's like, okay. But what's really funny about it is I've also had people say to me recently, somebody said to me who I respect said, you know, your work is all over the place. Like you don't have a look. Somebody said to me. And it's like,
how
it's
do you
funny
feel about
because
that? Because you believe that you do have a look.
I think that in this particular series, I'm trying different things. So this is a little more experimental than normal. But I think that I'm definitely not one of those people who shoots the same exact lighting style, everyone in the same picture. You know what I mean? I'm not that guy. But yeah, I feel like when I'm taking all of these pictures, even when somebody thinks that they look different, to me, I feel like I'm taking the same picture all the time.
How did you respond to that? Did you push back? Did you take that in?
I let it roll over me. It bothered me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because I disagree, and I also feel like, you know, it was a little bit of a slap, you know,
mm-hmm.
which is fine. You know, everyone is entitled to their opinions, and I can only react to what other people do, right?
Yes, but if this is a person that you trust,
right,
not just some random person, you know, online.
I prefer to call them randos, but yes.
Randos. Rando, the Archer character from, you know, he always chooses Randy as his alter ego name.
Yeah.
But if it is a person that you trust,
right,
having a person like that in your critique corner is valuable.
Yes, but they're not always right. And I think that's...
Neither are you.
Right, absolutely. Right. But I have to put more weight on myself than the people around me, or else everyone else is making the decisions, not me.
Well, but again, I think you're going to very quickly from one person to everyone else.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if you have, well, right. Well, that's the other thing, is that, like, he may say that and somebody else may say, all your stuff looks the same. And then he's saying, your stuff doesn't have a cohesive whole to it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
and it's kind of like, well, wait a minute. They both can't be right. You know,
right.
And when people say all my stuff looks the same, I take not offense to that, but I take that as criticism as much as I take your stuff is all over the place as I take criticism. Right. But to me, those are either I'm empty or I'm full. I can't be both. You know, it's like, Schrodinger's cat of self-denial, you know?
So which one cuts deeper? Everything looks the same, or there's nothing that ties it together?
The second cuts deeper than the first. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with somebody saying, I think all my stuff looks the same. Because I think that if you look at almost any photographer that we talk about, you know, if you look at, you know, Dan Winters has a lighting style that he uses in studio portraiture. They're lit similarly, a lot of them, right? I mean, they have similar things to them. Does everyone say, well, Dan, that just looks like another Dan Winters picture? And he probably would say, yeah, that's the point. I'm Dan Winters, right? You know, right? And so there's a little bit of a, it depends on where you are, you know, or Martin, what's the guy who does the close-up shots with the strip boxes on the sides and the, you know what I'm talking about, like the real close-up faces of famous people.
Not Platon.
No, not Platon. The starts with an S. Schomburger. Anyway,
not Howard Schatz.
No. I'll figure it out. It's one of our guys that we've talked about before. And you look at it, and it's like it's literally the same picture as if he had his setup and he sat people down and he shot these pictures of them. And they all have something different in them because the subjects are different, but it's essentially the same picture over and over again. Now,
right,
there are people who would say that's the same picture over and Martin Scholler, right?
He's oh, yeah, guy. Okay. Martin right. Scholler, my mistake, yeah.
And I mean, it's essentially the same picture over and over again, which, at least from the point of view of, you know, do these pictures feel different? Well, no, right. That's the point, right. Is that they're...
Or Hurley, he's another good example.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, for years, he was using the exact same kind of Kino Flow lighting setup.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so, I mean, to me, at a certain level, consistency is a state of, is a prideful thing, right? Where it's like, oh, yeah, these all feel similar. And that's a good thing. I'm trying to make them feel similar because I want people to have Bill Wadman, in this case, come out in this set of photos, right?
Right.
But why is it that I'm drawn to that particular kind of portrait as opposed to some other kind of portrait? I, you know, that's the answer that I can never quite grasp. I don't know if it's an experience I had when I was younger, pictures that I saw that I gravitated to for some unknown reason, or did I see those pictures at a particular time in my life when X was going on, or I was impressionable, or I was listening to this music that ingrained that stuff into my brain in a certain way, you know?
Or is it that you are able to do those well?
Right. Or is it that, yeah, that
that's your sweet spot in terms of artistic expression versus technical prowess.
Right. This is where I sit on this continuum. Sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's and of course, I mean, things get refined and you get better at things and you know, sure, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, there's a question of why someone enjoys making a certain kind of art and not some other kind of art. Mm-hmm. You know? And that's one of the things I like about somebody like Picasso is that he was always, you know, Picasso was six different artists throughout his life.
Yeah. Yeah. And was seemingly always able to see around the corner of, right, of what do I want to do next? You know, it's almost like he was always just finishing one period to get to the next one.
Exactly. Right. And I mean, granted, you and I are looking at it. I mean, Picasso lived until he was like 90 years old, right? I mean, he was like a pretty old guy. Mm-hmm. He lived until he was 92, 91. And so there's part of it where we're looking back on in hindsight. I'm comparing myself, not comparing myself to Picasso like I'm Picasso. I'm comparing myself saying, oh, you're crap because you haven't been through 12 different versions of Bill Wadman portrait photographer. And it's like, well, I've been doing this for 10 years. He did it for 70 years or 80 years, right?
Like, right, right, right.
I have time.
Now, over the course of the long haul, if you look back on 40 years, 50 years, and you're still having these feelings, then I would think that's much more cause for existential concern.
If you're not seeing growth or you feel pigeonholed into a certain kind of work, whether for market reasons or for lack of creative expression reasons, right? Where I'm making, if you're Martin Scholler and everyone expects that picture, so you go and you take that picture over and over again. Well, that's one thing if you want to do that because you're making a lot of money. If you're doing that, but you feel like, man, I really wish I could do something different, but everyone wants this stupid picture that I keep taking, right? You know what I mean? I'm not saying they're stupid. I think they're lovely, but
no, but it's the Stones playing Satisfaction at every single show.
Exactly. Now, they may really, really like Satisfaction, in which case it's a great tune. More power to you, you know?
Right.
But if you're still playing that because you can't come up with anything else because you're uninspired. Well, I mean, that's also a sucky place to be, right? That's a corner that you're snuck into too, as well.
Right.
I don't know. I just thought it was interesting. The idea of, you know, you keep changing through life, you keep making new stuff. And there's this idea, especially in the world of creativity, that you're trying to reach some place where your voice is most clear, right? You know what I mean? Like you're trying to find your voice, as they put it.
Right.
But in reality, you're trying to find your voice for right now. Right. Because it's not going to be your voice forever. In the same way that you've never made it, you're never going to find that one thing that is the thing that you do that is going to satisfy you for the rest of time. Things are going to change. You're going to change. Your art's going to change. And this is just one moment in all of these things converging in time and space, you know, and that's okay.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that's true.
You know,
because it doesn't have to be a struggle either.
Which part of it?
The deciding whether or not this is or isn't your voice.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. Right. But I think that there's a lot of people who do think about it in a way of, okay, yeah, I took this picture. Yes, I like this picture, but is this really the way I want to see the world? It's like, well, it's the way you did see the world. So deal with it, you know?
And if it's not, if it really goes against something in you, then go shoot it again.
Right, right. Especially if it's something that if it's something that you made that you weren't all that excited about, but other people were gushing over, maybe you hit on something. Maybe that's an example of a place where it is something that comes to you easily that you need to explore more. And it's not that you don't like doing it. It's just that you haven't liked doing it yet because you hadn't done it yet. And therefore you've got like a little hangover thing going on.
Right. 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 Right.
I don't know. I just thought this was interesting. If anybody else has anything to throw into the mix, let me know.
Yeah. Podcast at ontakingpictures.com. Yeah.
You got anything else?
I'd like to think about that a little more and kind of dive into it.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to throw it out there, and I figure you and I can think about it for a week.
I'd like to chew on that a little bit more. Yeah.
It's fun. Should we go to the group? Keep this one relatively short.
Let's go to the group.
All right.
Let's roll that beautiful bean footage.
You know, I didn't realize that going to the videotape was a specific guy. I wasn't aware of that. Let's go to the videotape. Apparently, it's let's see what his name is. Videotape. Apparently, it's Warner Wolf.
Warner Wolf.
Born in 1937, American television and radio sports broadcaster, best known as a local news sports anchor in D.C. and New York. And his first catchphrase, let's go to the videotape. There you go, nice. Warner Wolf. He was a Monday Night Baseball guy.
Well done, Warner.
Yeah, see, there you learn. You learn something every day. I'll add that to the show notes, too.
All right, so last week, Overhead was
Mario Mirabile.
Mario Mirabile, that's a terrific shot.
That's a fantastic shot.
Mind the gap. Yeah, great shot. If you are not part of the group, look in the show notes. Go join the group. We everybody's approved. I don't know why we do it, but it's...
We set it up that way and we can't change it. So
we can't change it.
You're
going
to have to deal with it.
So until we dump Google Plus, that's the way it is.
Hey, by the way, I thought as an alternative to Google Plus, if we ever have to switch, how about our Slack channel?
You know, a couple people have mentioned that. And in fact, if you are listening, if you're listening to this show, I looked for ontakingpictures.slack.com. Somebody has already registered that.
Who is this person?
And it wasn't me and it wasn't Bill. So if you are listening and you have registered on takingpictures.slack.whatever.com, would you get in touch with one of us, podcast@ontakingpictures.com, and let us know that? Because you can't...
Let us know how much it'll cost Jeffrey to take it.
Right. To my knowledge, you cannot find out who owns a particular Slack channel.
Okay. Yeah, we'll figure that out.
Yeah, that's been bandered around a little bit.
It's, and it's I think an that option.
It wouldn't be a bad thing.
Yeah. And it keeps an archive of everything. I don't know.
It's not a bad idea. Not a bad idea.
Sorry. All right. Back to the
John Dubois, beautiful thunderstorm.
Yes.
Look at that thing.
Those are some storm clouds.
I got to tell you, I would love to do that.
Couldn't stand the weather that John Dubois.
Oh man.
How's that song go?
Steve, I'm not even going to do it for you. I'm not going to do it. No, I'm not going to do it.
Oh, now I'm going to have to look it up. Damn it. I used to
Andrew
have that
Shields
record.
Overhead. Is it on Texas Flood? What's that on?
It was on Couldn't Stand the Weather. It was a studio record. It was called Couldn't Stand the Weather, I think.
Oh, that was the name of the record. Okay.
Yeah. Let me see.
Terrific backing band, that Double Trouble.
God, he was good.
Yeah. Let's see. Rob Eaves, Palms Overhead. Nice.
Boom, boom, boom. Bum, 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 da, da, da. Sorry, go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, from Brooklyn, New York, put your hands together. Mr. Bill. Wadman.
John Dubois was also apparently in New York City looming up at stuff on, I do believe that would be 6th Avenue probably.
The Three Sisters. That's a cool shot, John.
Dubois getting around.
Dennis Skyam, the Citadel of Copenhagen, as seen from overhead. That's beautiful.
Oh man,
is that a drone?
Look at Philip Hill's picture of the semi-transparent floor and the guy standing on it. Oh, that's cool. I'm gonna give that one a plus.
Yeah,
look at that. That's cool.
Yeah, it is. Barry, nice shot of the shoes hanging on the wire. Wow, another one. Winslow overhead. That Philip Hill shot is a terrific shot.
Yeah, that's neat.
Vapor Man.
That is neat.
Philip, if you ever print that, I know a couple of show hosts that would dig that.
Yeah. Wait, me and who?
Nice. Wow.
What is the deal
you
with...
You can't hear me because I'm under the bus. Right.
What is the deal with the kids throwing sneakers on the power lines? What is that,
I don't know.
Is that an actual thing? Like, is it a thing that means something, or is it just kids being stupid?
I don't know if it means anything.
Because there was all kinds of what would they be like, you know, sneakers. Stories of it being like, oh, that's where they sell drugs, or, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, that's like, that's a marker. That's like some sort of subversive marker.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know.
Okay. I think, I think that all might be a bunch of misinformation.
Nick Van Zanten. That's a cool shot of that Coast Guard helicopter.
Oh, I like, Tim Schiff's composition of the ice with two different polarizing filter orientations. It was in the photo sharing section, but it's pretty cool. He basically took a picture with the polarizer twisted two different ways and then combined the two in Photoshop. It's pretty nice.
Combined?
He combined. It's combining via composite. It's combined. Wise guy.
Yeah, that's a cool shot.
Yeah.
That's a very cool shot. Okay, so... next up, how about collection? What do you think of that?
Collection. Now, a collection of pictures or a picture of a collection?
I'm not saying.
Okay. Yeah. You're just going to stay silent, huh?
I'm going to stay silent on that one because I'm still under the bus.
Still not from out from under the bus. That's
right.
Terrible.
So collection will be the assignment for the next week.
Okay.
And if you're not a member, go join the group. The link is in the show notes.
Mm-hmm. I've already put the link in the show notes.
And if you don't want to look at the show notes, then just look up On Taking Pictures Google Plus group. Wow, this is pretty cool. Louise Lawler, this is nice.
Okay, this is. I haven't decided yet.
I like this.
Okay,
where'd you find this?
Well, this is the question. Okay, so Louise Lawler has a show at MoMA right now through July 30th, and I need to go. In fact, I think it might be, it's member early hours. So I can go before they open and go check it out without a billion people around. She is known for photographing portraits of other artists' work, giving special attention to spaces in which they are placed and methods used to make them. So she's making portraits of other people's art.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't quite know how I feel about it now that I'm looking through it.
One of her things that she's well known for, I think there's a version in one of these articles. She's famous. One of her most famous pictures is this photograph of, it's called Monogram Arranged by Mr. and Mrs. Burton Thermain, New York, 1984. And I'm going.
You got a link.
I'm trying to find a big enough version that it looks like something. So, all right. So this is a crappy small version of it, but maybe the best that I can find at the moment. Here's a link. It is a picture, a photograph of a Jasper Johns American flag.
Oh, one of the white flag.
Bleached white ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
Over a made bed at this person's house. And
so these are
a print
sort
of this thing sold for $125,000.
Hmm.
Thoughts? Hmm.
Well, I mean, on the one hand, it is sort of a curated still life.
Yep.
On the other hand, it's a ridiculous amount of money
for a picture of somebody else's. Picture.
For a picture of somebody else's work. I mean, you. It's an interesting idea because I think, you know, as I am still, you know, going back to The Voice, I'm still looking for my voice. I think this is interesting in that it challenges: is this her voice, or is this documenting? The voice of Jasper Johns or whomever she happens to be photographed. Is this art or documentary?
According to her Wikipedia article, her later work, her work in its diverse manifestations, installations, events, publications, souvenirs, addresses or confronts prevailing systems of established art, taste, and style. She is, however, less interested in the original process of creating a work of art, which is kind of more what you and I are into, parenthetically.
Right, right, right.
Than in the context lying behind the artist's sphere of influence in which the work is subsequently situated.
Hmm.
Often framed as appropriation art or institutional critique, Lawler's photographic work lays bare the day-to-day operations of the art world and its circulation and presentation of artworks, Her work is interested in the intersection of art and commerce. Art school pretense or interesting concept?
No. That description is a little flippant for me. I like the idea of it, but I don't know if it's high art in terms of and again, you know, we're going to get beat up for this. Because who are you to say what art is?
Right.
So
all we can say is what we think art is, right?
Right. In practice, what would be the difference between this and
somebody with their iPhone walking around MoMA?
Yeah, or me going to a friend's house who happens to have a Cy Twombly painting hanging in her dining room.
You have a friend with a Cy Twombly painting?
I do.
Cool.
And I photograph it with her dining table in the foreground, and that's how is that art, not just interior design?
Right. Right. Yeah. I think it's
an interesting question.
You do get into an inclusive definition of art in which everything is art, so therefore nothing is art.
Yeah.
I mean, you can easily fall into that. And I've never met the woman. I discovered her, quote unquote, a few days ago. I've been staring at some of the stuff. I've been doing a little reading. I brought it here as Photographer of the Week as one of those examples of ones that I think people should be aware of. It can spark conversation.
Yeah. I will tell you, on a personal level, I am less and less and less concerned with talking about what art is or what art isn't.
Yep.
I just want to get on with making what I make.
I agree. But is this her making anything, or is this her basically appropriating other people's work? In which case, what is this? Go make something of your own. I don't know. I'm saying that as a third party, not as me.
I don't know. I mean, in this article, the Bomb magazine article, that first photograph, the mirror 2003-2004.
Yep.
That's kind of an interesting picture. I don't really know what I'm looking at, but I find it to be an interesting picture.
Right.
The one below it, Roy's Eye. That's kind of interesting too. That perspective of seeing all of that work. Now, what would be even cooler for me is if she had arranged those pieces and then done that charcoal drawing herself in between them all.
Oh, I see. Right. So,
that would have been more interesting.
Now, interestingly enough, that, per our last conversation, is right down your alley. Of taking some other people's stuff, mixing it with a little bit of your stuff, and trying to create something new in the intersection of somebody else's and yours.
Yes. That speaks to me much deeper than simply, and not to be dismissive, I'm not trying to be dismissive, but photographing what's already there without adding anything but a field of view.
Right.
That feels very borderline.
But to spin it around.
Yeah, go ahead.
Isn't all we do in photography is decide on the field of view?
Sure. I mean, yeah, that's the big thing of it, right? You're deciding what's in the frame and what's outside
and
the frame.
That's all you get to choose.
But is she, and maybe this is a minuscule distinction, is she an artist? Is she a photographer? Is there or should there be a difference?
Yeah, and you could say, well, yes, she's taking pictures of other people's work, but you know what? The picture that we liked in the group of the three buildings is a picture of some architect's work.
Yeah.
You know?
Richard Prince has made a career out of appropriating other people's work.
Right. I think you and I generally are somewhat dismissive of appropriated art, period. And I don't mean dismissive as in we don't want to talk about whatever it is, but I think both of you and I kind of cry foul on a lot of art appropriation.
Maybe, but now that you've just brought up that building thing, that gives me something else to chew on.
Right? Because then now you're like, oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, a terrific picture of a Julius Shulman building.
Right.
You didn't do the building, Shulman did.
Right, Margaret Bourke White photograph of the George Washington Bridge.
Yes.
Is more than just the George Washington Bridge, or something separate from the George Washington Bridge.
Well, see, now that throws a stick in the spokes.
Right. This is why it's difficult defining.
Let's come back to that next week too.
Yeah. Anyway, she's
art appropriation as art. Because now that I'm thinking about it, this same picture. See, this is why I love doing this show. I'm looking at this picture and I just said, you know, I think I'd like it better if those charcoal drawings on the wall, whatever those are, were done by her. Right. And I think I would. But the fact that she saw that is still valuable. The fact that she saw that composition still has value and is creative.
Can I go one step further?
Yep.
In some ways, what she has been doing for 30 years, which is I'm walking around this museum and I'm looking at this piece in this particular angle in this particular way, and that's interesting looking to me, let me take a picture of it, is basically presaging the Instagram generation.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. If she turned her camera on chefs instead of painters and sculptors
look how much artwork. If you type in hashtag MoMA or hashtag Smithsonian, what you get is a lot of stuff that looks like this.
Yeah.
You know, which is people finding interesting ways to frame what is right in front of them on the wall as artwork.
Right.
And I've done it. You've done it. I think we've all done it.
Absolutely.
Right? And I'm not taking. Sometimes people find ways, and you go, "Wow, that's pretty cool." Like in this first MoMA picture on the MoMA page of the crazy sort of Hall of Mirrors version of this painting.
Yeah,
right?
Very distorted. Right. Yeah, and that's what I looked at. I thought, wow, I would see that and go,
"That's pretty cool." Right.
There, yeah, it's pretty neat.
A week and a half ago when I was in. When I was over in, let me do this so I can, Jeffrey, I'm gonna text you a picture, Jeffrey, that is from my trip that I didn't use.
Okay. My phone is out in the other room.
Oh, okay. So I will email it to you then.
Sorry.
I took a picture at SF MoMA of this girl, this woman that I was shooting that day. As a piece of and there was artwork in the room and it was mirrored, it was interesting, and I ended up using that as the picture, right? Mm-hmm, and that in itself ends up becoming like that's kind of interesting in the sense that I'm using that artwork as the form which I stick her into. But I don't know if that's the way that I want to go with today's picture. You know what I mean? Like there's
right.
Because in some ways that's not my thing. That's me just using somebody else's work and taking this. I feel like I'm cheating. I feel like I'm using somebody else's art to make my own.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
for me, that feels weird. But for other people, that's not just normal. That's the way they see the world, you know?
Right.
And I, it's like, man, I don't know where I come down on that kind of stuff, you know? Here it is.
Maybe we're looking at it all wrong, Bill. Maybe all art is appropriation.
Yeah. In which case, you know, if there's no difference between any of these things, then you start getting this place where what's the point of making any distinctions if there are no distinctions to make? I'm sending you an image in Skype, but you can see it. And I liked this picture, but I felt like it was too easy. Like I was just using somebody else's thing.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know,
it's interesting though. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. And when I was taking it, I was like, "Oh, that's really neat." But you get where my line would be.
Yeah,
and if I was taking a lot of the Lawler,
I could see very
pictures,
much where this would be a throwaway image for you.
Right. But a lot of people would be like, "Oh, that's really cool." And if I was taking pictures like Ms. Lawler, I would have a hard time putting my name on it as original work. And I'm not saying that she shouldn't or that it doesn't. I just, for whatever reason, my line is further down the road than hers is.
Right.
You know, I don't know.
Yeah. Chime in on this, listeners, either in the group or podcast@ontakingpictures.com. Yep. This is an interesting discussion. I like this.
Okay.
I like this a lot.
I like that you like it.
Yeah.
Got anything else?
Huh. Not about that. No, I'm going to have to go think about this.
Per usual, we are at 1 hour and 30 minutes, so it's perfect.
That's kind of funny how that
podcast works out. ontakingpictures.com. You can leave us a voicemail, 347-687-9411. Bill Wadman, Jeffrey Sidoros on Instagram and Twitter. Anything else?
Nope. I think that's it.
Okay.
263 next week.
Yep. 262 is in the can.
Until then, go take some pictures.
Going on and on the way we are for so long. To any fool, it's plain to see something's wrong. As this way, say what you wanna say.
I seem ecstatic.
give me a little thrilled. More feeling.
Okay, give me a second.